Hey, listen, we are in December, which means there is a lot going on in your life, in the life of our church, Christmas, all things Christmas. And so before I jump into the message, I want to just share about a few things that we have, and I want to make sure that we're just really prepared for everything on the calendar for this month, okay? You probably heard, but Christmas is coming in just a few short weeks, and here's my challenge, and I know you've heard about the times that's going to have four experiences. Here's what I want to encourage you all to do is do not miss this window of opportunity to say, who could I bring or invite to come to church? I know that you're probably looking and going, oh, let's go on Friday or let's go on Sunday on Christmas Eve. That's great. Find a time with your family. But if I could just encourage you, it is a big miss when the Church of Jesus does not use this opportunity to spread the message of hope to the world around us, because statistics show that over 80% of people have said that if someone would invite them to church, they would probably go. This is that window. And so I want to encourage you, make sure you grab invites. We got stands by the doors. I want to encourage you, challenge you, grab invites. Let's invite people to Christmas, okay? So that's going to be incredible. If you've never been to Christmas here at X Church, it is, bar none, one of the best experiences that you will ever have in your life, okay? You will, like, I can die after it, and everything's good, all right? So don't miss Christmas. Make sure you do it, share it with someone. Now, here's what you need to know. The following Sunday, we will not be meeting in person. It's kind of a rhythm of our church that we haven't been meeting the following Sunday, which is going to be December 31st, and so you got New Year's. You can kind of do whatever in your plans. But we've done that for many years. Simply, it's kind of one way, as we know that the Christmas season, especially for families and having time off with kids, it's our way of really saying thank you to all the servant leaders who spend hours and hours, hundreds of hours all year being able to help us do what we do here on Sunday. And so it's that one weekend where we're like, listen, be with your family, enjoy the holidays. But we are going to have a special experience that you only get to see broadcast online that day. Okay, so Sunday, December 31st, I believe that's the Sunday. Watch that broadcast. It's going to be fun. It's going to be impactful. We're going to celebrate what God's done through our church throughout the year. It's going to be awesome. Then the following, I know I said December, but I'm going to cheat a little bit. The following weekend, the very first weekend, where are you going to be the very first weekend of January? Right here, right? Because you're going to start off the year going, we're going to get things right, okay? But I need to tell you about a small change. On January 7th, we are changing our experience times to 9 and 10:45 a.m., okay? 9 and 10:45 a.m. I want everybody to say those two times with me out loud so you have no excuse come January 7th. We are going to have church at what? 9 and... Okay, now let me tell you why, for those of you that go, but I like sleeping in really late and rolling in barely at 9:15:30, and then, you know, 11:30-ish, and... Here's the thing. I need you, if you, especially in the 9:30, to look around. Can you all look around just real quick? Put your head on a swivel. Look around. In the 9:30 experience, quite often, we are bumping up against capacity, which is an awesome thing. Okay? I love it. And so what that tells me is that a lot of you love to go to church early. And this has also created challenges in our kids' environment as well. There are rooms sometimes busting with kids and leaders to the point where it's like, if you're a servant leader in the ex-kids area, we owe you the biggest debt of gratitude, okay? You see your servant leaders after this experience, give them money. The keys to your car, do whatever, because you have no idea what it's like if you have 28 kids that are 2 years old running around and four adults trying to manage it, okay? So we want to balance things out, especially as we go into the new year, because you may not know this or care, but the beginning of every year is the biggest growth slash attendance time in the church. So we are trying to make room. And by doing that, we want to even things out. And so I'm specifically talking to maybe most of you in the 9:30 to say, hey, if you go, gosh, 9 o'clock, that's a little bit early. Great. Move back to 10:45 if you would. You'll still get out in time for lunch. Cool? 9 and 10:45. Just want to make sure that we're clear on that. That's our goal, though, is to balance the experiences so we can continue to grow as a church, okay? Make room for people. So we're doing that. And then don't forget, next weekend, you cannot miss church. It is going to be one of the most powerful experiences of the year, is we're going to come together to give our World Changer offering. It's something we do every year. We've been talking about it for the last month or so. It's a free will offering. It's an opportunity for us to come and through the generosity of our heart to give, to be a part of a mission bigger than just ourselves. And we intentionally put it on the date in this time of year, and I know it creates some challenges. I know that it's like, wow, this is an expensive time of year. It is. But let's remember that we celebrate Christ in Christmas, and I think one of the greatest ways to do that is to bring God an offering, a gift, for his church to be able to use. And we talked last week, if you were here, about a lot of the different organizations that we're partnering with that we're gonna try to help and bless this season through our end of the year offering. So I want you to be prayerfully considering what you do. And listen, even if you go, I am dead broke, come next weekend, because we're gonna have a way for everyone to participate that is gonna be really powerful. Now here's what I understand whenever there's an offering, whenever there's an opportunity, whenever there's anything in front of us that we're challenged or inspired to say, would we be generous? It doesn't matter if you see somebody on the side of the road when you're driving and you feel a little bit of guilt, like, oh, should I give them money? Or if you hear about a family in need in your circle and you're kind of like, here's what I experience. And maybe I'm the only one. If I am, then I apologize, but I don't think I'm the only one. I often feel this internal battle. I feel this struggle. I feel this tug of war inside, because my heart says, oh, I want to be so generous. But my mind often says, I don't really know that you have an ability to do that, Tim. And I don't know if any of you feel this tension. The best way I could paint what my journey is like when it comes to moments like we're walking through as a church, it kind of feels like I've got a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other, and they're both talking to me. You ever have that feeling? Like one moment, I've got an angel that is going, don't you want to be a part of helping these organizations, the Circleville schools, the foster teens? And I'm like, yes. Don't you want to be generous? I'm like, yes. Don't you want to be part of something bigger than yourself? I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And I'm just cheering the angel on. And then when the angel gets quiet, the little devil on the other side speaks up. You ever have this? And the devil's going, yeah, but you don't have that much. You've been saving for something that's really important, and we don't have a lot of margin. It's a really expensive time, and we got to buy Christmas presents for a bunch of people we don't even like, but my wife says we keep having to do it every year, and I'm trying to manage, and I don't want to go into debt, and I don't know what to do. You ever feel this tension, okay? I don't know if I'm the only one, but in a moment of honesty, I'll be right there, and I'll just say, I feel this way every Christmas. I really do. I know it's the season of giving, but it also feels like the season of going broke too. And I feel this, and I imagine that maybe I'm not the only one, that there's this internal battle and struggle. And do you know what I think is really at the heart of it? Because I have to have this conversation every year with myself. What I think is really at the heart of it is fear. It's this idea that if God prompts my heart to give wherever I see the need or an opportunity like this, that I feel like there may not be enough for us. There may not be enough for what we have, what we need. And here's what I want you to know. If you ever feel that way, I just want you to know you are not alone. I feel it. And here's the beautiful thing. When you look through the story of the Gospels, what I see over and over is that Jesus' disciples felt this way too. In fact, there's a moment where Jesus was with his disciples, and he has this kind of like, I think really just a powerful, it's a miracle moment, one that I'm gonna show you in a moment that you probably heard before if you've been around church. But he has this moment that I think is as much about the miracle as it is what he tries to convey to his disciples. And so if you've got a Bible with you today, we're gonna be in Matthew 14. If you want to get it out, or if you got an electronic device, Matthew chapter 14. Now, let me give you the context right as we dive into this moment, because I don't want you to miss the power of what we're going to experience. Jesus, before this, had sent his disciples out to kind of go represent him to the towns. And he says, guys, I'm going to give you my authority, my power. I want you to go around all the towns, and I want you to, you see someone that's hurting, you pray for them. I'm giving you my authority. You're going to be able to see miracles happen. You're going to see people that are afflicted by spiritual forces. You're going to pray, and that spirit's going to leave. Like, he gives them this power to go out and represent Jesus. And so they go out, and they're doing that. And they're just seeing miracle after miracle. It's crazy. What we don't get a lot of in this moment is that Jesus, he hangs back and he's by himself, it seems, as he sent them out, and these are the ones he hung out with. And while Jesus was kind of in this moment of waiting for his disciples, and I'm sure he was doing ministry, he gets some really bad news. He gets told that his cousin, John, that he knows, his family member, was just murdered by the king, King Herod. And it's right in that environment. Can you imagine? He gets the bad news. The disciples are coming back all pumped up because they've never experienced anything like this. They're like, Jesus, we got some good news to tell you. You're never going to believe it. And he's like, I probably am going to believe it. And he's like, we pray for people and they got healed. I know. I told you it was going to happen. You know? And so they're all pumped and excited. And Jesus goes, hey, that's great. I got some bad news though. And he tells them about John. And John was a well-known figure, and everybody knew his story, and he served God, and he lost his life. And so I imagine fear may have started to creep in with them. And so it's in that moment where they're exhausted, they're tired, they've been out. In fact, they're hungry. When Jesus decides, guys, we need a little bit of R&R. We need to get away. And that's where we're going to pick up the story. I'm going to start in Matthew 14, verse 13, if you got your Bible. In verse 13, it says, when Jesus heard what had happened, that's to John, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. That's him and his disciples. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the towns. Verse 14, when Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd and he had what? Can you all say that word out loud with me? He had compassion on them and he healed their sick. Now, I want to point out, this is the moment where Jesus just wants to get away. He knows his disciples are tired. He had been ministering to people. I think that in a way he's dealing with grief and loss and all this stuff. And maybe Jesus was a little peopled out. Have you ever been peopled out before? And I'm not just talking to the introverts. I know if you're an introvert, you're peopled out by 5 p.m. every day. You're like, I don't want to be around people. Even extroverts can finally get peopled out. And so Jesus, I think, is peopled out. His disciples are hungry, tired. He's sad. He's grieving. I mean, this was a family member. And so he says, guys, let's get away. And they hop in the boat and they get away and they leave all the people. And guess what? All the people see Jesus leaving and they go, he's going to the other side of the lake. Run. And they take off running. Could you imagine? We just need to be alone. And you pull your boat up and there are crowds of people pouring in. Like, this is a moment where Jesus looks at the crowd and he sees that all the need that he was ministering to before just followed him. And this is one of those situations where we just need to rest, we need to recoup, we need to grieve, and yet there's this massive need right in front of him. You know what I've discovered about need and opportunity? Is I've discovered that most of the time, situations of need don't come at convenient times. You ever notice that? You ever notice that there's always somebody that needs help? They need help moving. They need help at their house. They need help somebody in your circle when you are the busiest you've ever been at work. Or maybe like there's an opportunity like we have now to give and you're like, this is one of the most expensive seasons of the year, Pastor. Do you know that? Yeah, I know. I just find that a lot of times need does not wait for us to have margin and space and desire. It's always there at the most inconvenient times. But here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus could not help. There was something inside of him, tired, hungry, grieving, sad, that couldn't help when he saw the people. In fact, the story, scripture tells us that he was moved with compassion, moved by compassion. I love the Greek word that is used right there. It's this fun kind of compound word, splagnizomehi. Splagnizomehi. Would you all like to say it? Okay, you don't. Okay, splagnizomehi. I understand. This is what I study. This is what I do. It's this Greek word that literally means to be moved as to your bowels. And interesting, in the Hebrew culture, you know how we often think we reference the mind, and sometimes, well, we go mind, that's our intellect, and we go our heart, and that's our you know, we love, and they believed that it was the bowels, the pit of your stomach, that really was the place where love and pity came from. And so this word, splagnizomai, where we get the word compassion, it literally means like I'm moved deep inside of me. Or maybe you could say when you see need, it's when you get sick to your stomach. It bothers you that much. Do you know one of the things that I believe really is a characteristic of every human being is that we feel compassion when we see hurting people, when we see brokenness, when we see suffering. And oh, by the way, I believe that that quality is part of being imaged after God. I think it's one of the things, why? Because animals don't feel that way. You'll never go into the safari in Africa and see wildebeest watching lions attack and kill antelope and go, I feel so terrible for that antelope. You know what they're thinking? Thank God it's not me. See, there's something in every human that I believe is a mark of the image of God. That is, there's something that moves us. There's a capacity for compassion inside of us that when we see something wrong, we say, that's not fair. I believe it points to God. And so I have a question that I just want all of us to ruminate on. And I don't need you to say this out loud. I just want you to think about it maybe this week. And it's a simple question. What moves your heart? What moves your heart? What breaks your heart? You know what I've discovered? That we're all a little bit different. And I think that's on purpose. And there are certain things that may move you that maybe don't move me. And I think that's what's so beautiful about the diversity of the church. I'm asking you what moves your heart. Is it injustice? When you see injustice in the world, does something rise up inside of you? Do you get a fire in your belly? That might, compassion, it moves you. What is it? Is it poverty? Is it hunger? Is it people caught in addiction and can't break free? Is it the environment when you see what's happening to our world? What is it that breaks your heart? Maybe you're the kind of person that every time you see or hear about an orphan, you're like, I want to foster and adopt every single one in the entire world. If I had enough money and a big enough house, I would. I'm asking you what moves you, because I think here's a scary thought, but many of us, especially here in America, where we are so blessed, I think that we can spend a majority of our life and never pause and ask that question. I know, I do it all the time. I think a lot of us, we can live our whole lives and never pause to say, wait, what in this world moves my heart? Because if you never stop and ask that question, here's the danger in it, is that you may spend your entire life thinking about what you need and you want and never see the need that God puts in front of you. Jesus could not help when he saw the people. Here's the thing, is we've been talking about being world changers. And I just want to see our church, I want to see us dream a little bigger. I want to see us live for a bigger story than just our own. Here's the thing I want you to understand. World changers, what separates a world changer from every other person in this world is not just somebody who feels bad when you see something, but it's someone who does something about it. That's what makes a world changer. It's not just, oh, I feel bad for all the hungry people in this world. It's when we're moved to action. It's when maybe God wants me to do something about it. And I think the challenge, to be honest, when I talk about injustice and poverty and hunger and clean water and addiction and illiteracy and the environment, it could be anything that moves your heart, the brokenness in our own backyard and the schools and the... I think the challenge is, and I've often felt this way, maybe you do, is like, what can I do? I'm one person. I don't have a lot of resource. I don't have the answers. What can I do? But this world would be a really terrible place if we all said that. The reason why we see needs being met all over the world is because there are people who say, I will do something about it. And as I talk about world changers through this series, there's one person that I was reading about the story of his life, and I'd never heard his name before this past week. And yet, when I think about modern history, somebody that has changed the world maybe more than anyone you have ever heard of, it could be this guy. It's this guy named Norman Borlaug. How many have ever heard of the name Norman Borlaug? Like three people. See, most of us have never heard of Norman. Norman Borlaug grew up during the Great Depression. He didn't have a lot of money. Inspired by his grandfather to go to school, college, didn't have any money, had to work his way. He worked for federal projects, worked in the projects, worked with people who were hungry, and it broke his heart. He was moved with compassion because he saw need in front of him. And he saw what happened when somebody was hungry, got food, how it changed their world. So he goes to college and he ends up getting a degree. He's a scientist. He ends up getting a degree, a doctorate degree in plant pathology and genetics. Now that's an exciting degree. Like, I bet he was a lot of fun on Friday nights, you know? Oh, Norman, you wanna go hit the club? Let's just, you know, and Norman, one of his things that was that he would spend hours and hours trying to cross, they call it hybrid wheat, because he grew up on a Midwest farm and he saw how wind and dust storms and how insects and other things would destroy the crops and then people would have no food. And so he took his scientific brain and started making hybrid versions of dwarf wheat that would produce a huge yield that was imperceptible to bugs and all these different things. And when he got his degree and he was figuring this out, he ended up taking a position by the Rockefeller Foundation from the U.S. government to go help Mexico, Mexico was dealing with massive famine and a shortage of food supply. And he was sent there because it affected the U.S. economy. And so in 1943, he goes to Mexico and begins to work with them about irrigation techniques and about his wheat that he had kind of made that doesn't need as much sunlight and all this stuff. And guess what happened? Within less than two decades, Mexico went from having a serious food problem to their export, to being able to export wheat and sell it around the world. In fact, they were harvesting six times the amount of wheat because of Norman Borlaug. He saw the impact of this and said, where is there malnutrition in the world? Where is the greatest impact of this? And at the time, it was India and Pakistan. So he goes to India and Pakistan and moves there and gets with the government and teaches them about agriculture and gives them this wheat. And within 5 years, India and Pakistan see their food security issue disappear because their crops started harvesting more than double in just five-year span. And then he goes from there and he goes to South America and he goes to sub-Saharan Africa and the places where there's malnutrition, where people every year are dying by the millions and millions, and he helps people be able to grow this crop that creates a huge yield. And in 1970, Norman Borlaug was issued or awarded the Nobel Peace Prize Award for his impact on humanity. He's a scientist that nobody knows his name. You know what they said about Norman Borlaug? One of the senators said that this is the first person who has ever been accredited for saving over 1 billion human lives. I wanted to tell you his story because I read it this past week and it blew me away. I thought, why is it I've never heard of this guy's name? And then I thought, but doesn't that speak to the power of nobody needs to know your name for you to make an impact in this world? And so I'm asking you today, what moves you? Because it's different. It may not be hunger like it was for Norman. What moves you? Can I tell you what moves me? Because I love all of the ministries that we support. And I love that we get to pack meals because we got to do that yesterday and I got to see well over 100 servant leaders here, I think packing over 14,000 meals to send to Haiti. Okay, I love being a part of things like that. It makes me so proud of our church. I wanna be about giving away millions. My dream is that every year our church will be able to give away over $1 million to pour into our community around the world to help people. That's my dream. But can I tell you what really moves my heart? What moves my heart is the spiritual need right around us. What moves my heart, and I wanna help people practically, but I also know that there is a greater need than sometimes even just the immediate practical physical need. It's someone's spiritual need, someone that doesn't know Jesus, someone that is staring down an eternity, hopeless without Jesus. That moves my heart. If you want to know why there's a value that says the gospel is our priority, it's because that moves my heart. Because I'm moved to know, I want to be a church that helps see eternities changed, generations changed because of the gospel. And I know we don't all have the same thing, but I'm asking you what moves your heart. Because in this moment, we got to see what moved Jesus's heart. And this is interesting. Jesus, he begins to minister, and what starts off as a little morning session turns into an all-day affair. And if you pick back up on our story, look at this in verse 15. It says, as evening approached, the disciples came to him and said, this is a remote place and it's already getting late. Send the crowds away so they can go to the villages and buy themselves some food. Okay, what started out is this inconvenience. There's thousands of people here and they're hurting and they're sick and they're helpless. They're like sheep without a shepherd. That's what Jesus said about them. Is now turning into a hunger issue because they're all day and they're hungry. And so here's what's interesting. The disciples come to him and they kind of interrupt him as he's ministering, and there's probably a huge line waiting for people to come up because they got ailments and they got problems, and Jesus is loving and blessing on them. And they interrupt him and go, Jesus, it's getting really late. And I'm kind of getting the sense that everybody's hungry. We should let them go, dismiss. Close the experience. We can stop it right here. We'll finish with a song. We release them, and they can go and find something to eat. Now, here's what if you read in the gospel accounts, and there's four of them, all four of the gospels carry this one miracle. There's only a few miracles that have made it on all gospel accounts. This is one of them. It's very significant. When you read between the lines, what you discover in Mark's account was that the disciples, when they came back from going around all the towns, had not had an opportunity to eat. So Jesus says, come on, let's get away and rest. And the moment they get away to go rest, thousands of people show up, and all of a sudden they got to have church. So when I read between the lines, I know this is a conjecture, but I don't know if they said this because they cared so much about the crowd. My guess is they were hungry. Don't you send them away? And Jesus responds, this is so funny, verse 16, you probably know it. Jesus replied, they don't need to go away. Who do you look at and say, you do something about it? He said, you. Look at the person next to you, point at them and say you. Make it feel awkward, because that's how it felt in that moment. They interrupt and Jesus says, you give them something to eat. And I love the rebuttal when another text tells us it was Philip that spoke up. It says, we have here only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, they answered. Can you imagine? What would your reaction be? I would have loved to have seen it in that moment. Whoa, Jesus. Like, maybe there's some government programs out there that would help deal with this. But here's the thing. We've only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. And John's account tells us they had a little boy who happened to be with them. Maybe he's a relative who had a small lunch. It was his. And Philip's like, we only got 5 loaves and 2 fish. You know, that'll feed 13 people. 12 of us, Eugene. I don't think that's going to feed 13,000. What are we going to do? And that's when Jesus is beginning to lean into a fear that I have, and my guess is a lot of us have. What is that fear? It's that fear of there's not enough. There's not enough. Can I just tell you, I deal with this fear a lot myself. I worry about not having enough, and I'm not just saying that. Like, I literally do. Even in the smallest ways, we'll be cooking dinner, my wife and I. It's just us, you know. We've got just a couple hamburgers. You know, we're at the stage of our life where sometimes, a lot of times we're cooking for just two of us, you know? And so we're preparing food, and then all of a sudden she'll get a text or a phone call, and she'll, hey, guess what? Kids are coming over. I'm like, what? We don't have enough. I love my kids, but I love my food too. I'm like, wait. We don't have enough food. She's like, nah, we got enough. We can make it work. No, I don't think we can. Really hungry, I will go to the store. I will buy more. She's like, we've got enough. I'm like, no, we don't. Because I'm being honest, there's an internal fear that I have. And as funny as that might seem, it plays out in every area of my life. This is why it's a funny joke. I'm often the very first person in line when it's time to eat. Because I'm not sure there's gonna be enough for everybody at the end. I mean, you might get some, but you're not gonna get as much as I got by going first. Y'all think I joke when I talk about I am not a generous person by nature. I do not joke. This is a fear that a lot of us feel, I hope it's not just me, that there's just, we don't have enough. And here's the thing, as long as we focus on what we don't have, we will always have the perspective of not having enough. I think that's why Jesus, when he says, you give them something to eat, and I love, because one of the other accounts says there's a little line in there where Jesus says, well, what do you have? And then Philip answers, we got 5 loaves and 2 fish, that's all we've got. Well, what do you have? It reminded me of the story in the Old Testament, 2 Kings chapter 4, where there's a woman whose husband was in ministry, serving in a prophetic realm, serving Elisha, and he died tragically and suddenly. And he left their family in a really bad financial place. And the creditors were coming to take the boys away, her boys, to go work it off. And she goes to Elisha and she says, I don't know what to do. They're coming to take my boys. We don't have anything. And Elisha looks at her and he says, tell me, what do you have in your house? And you know what her response is? She says, nothing. Well, I guess there's a little bit of oil. Just a little bit of oil. And Elisha says, do me a favor, go around to your neighbors and get as many jars, pots, pan, whatever you can, containers, empty containers. You're not asking them for stuff, you're asking them for that container. And bring them into your house and begin to pour the oil into containers. And she does. And guess what? In that moment, God supernaturally multiplies the oil. The very thing she thought she didn't have, I don't have anything, was the very thing that God used to create a miracle in her life. I just want you to get this thought. These two sentences, this thought I want us to get today, and that is that fear causes us to see what we don't have. Fear will always cause you to go, we don't have enough. But faith is trusting God for what we can't see. Do you hear what I'm saying? Fear will always cause us to go, we don't have it. I don't have the time to help. I don't have the money. We don't have the resource. We don't have the margin. But faith is trusting God with what you can't see. When God prompts your heart, it's saying, okay, I'm going to go help. I don't know if I got the time to do this, but I'm moved. I'm going to go do it. We're going to have an opportunity to give. I don't know if we can. When God prompts your heart, here's what I found. Just trust him. Because then you're positioning yourself to experience the miracle of God. And I love what happens. This is Jesus. He's setting up this whole moment. Look at verse 18 through 21. I love this, the end of the story. Jesus said, bring them here to me, he said. And he directed the people to sit down on the grass. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples and the disciples gave them to the people. And they all ate and they were satisfied. And the disciples picked up, how many basketfuls? Can you all say it out loud? How many? 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was about 5,000 men besides women and children. Easy, safe estimate is 15,000, but most of those families were way bigger. 20 or 25,000 people, probably easily, with 5 loaves and 2 fish. What did Jesus ask them to do with the small lunch? He said, bring it to me. He said, put it in my hands. And here's what I've discovered, what I often tend to do, is I try to hold on to the very thing I fear the most rather than release it to him. And this is what we do. We often, the thing that we worry about the most, we hold the tightest. If you are always worried about your finances, listen to me, you will never trust God with them. If you are always worried about your kids, you will never give them to God and trust God with them. Whatever it is you worry about the most is what you hold the tightest. But can I remind us of what faith looks like? Faith is putting what you have in God's hands. Faith is saying, in my hands, it's not enough. But God, in your hands, I know it's more than enough. I can't control the situation. I don't have enough, but God, I will give you what I can and watch what God does. Can I just tell you, in your finances, I have experienced this so much in my life that you could never not get me to give the first fruits of my increase to God through the tithe. Because you know what I've discovered? When I trust God with my finances, when I give him the tithe, the first 10%, when I put it into his hands, that's when he blesses it. That's when he multiplies it. That's when I see God's provision happen in my life. But if I worry, listen, you can't worry and surrender it. You can't worry and have faith at the same time. It's one or the other. It's one or the other. And in this, I really believe that Jesus, because he takes the small lunch, but then he does something. He could have easily just, okay, guys, just to go distribute it, but that's not what he did. Jesus did something I want to show you. Because I think what Jesus shows us is a pattern for provision. I want you to get this. There's a pattern for provision. Put it up. Go ahead and put up the pattern of provision. I want to show you what it is. What did he do when he got it? He looked up. He gave thanks. He broke it. He gave it. He looked up. He gave thanks. He broke it. He gave it. I want you all to say those four with me. We're going to say them out loud together because I want you to get this pattern in your mind today. He did what? He looked up. He gave thanks. He broke it. He gave it. Do it again. He looked up. He gave thanks. He broke it. He gave it. There's a pattern here that if we could learn these four things when it comes to what we worry about, when it comes to our lack, when it comes to our scarcity, I think we could experience God's provision supernaturally. What did he do? He looked up. The first thing he did when he got it was he looked up. What did that signify? He was looking at the source, not the resource. See, most of us have our eyes fixed on a resource and go, it's not very much. You want me to change the world? You don't know what's in my bank account. That doesn't matter. Because most of us take our eyes off of the source and put it on the resource. So I think Jesus, he takes the bread and the fish and he looks up because he was signifying to them all, God is my source. And if we knew the source, we wouldn't worry about the resource. If we knew the source, we would not fear and fret and worry about the resource. So he looked up, and then what did he do? He gave thanks. There's something about gratitude that can completely shift your perspective. He looked up and he said, God, thank you for what I have. Thank you for this small lunch. What would shift inside of us if instead of always looking at what we don't have, we actually started to thank God for what we do have? That's why we needed that week, Thanksgiving. Because I need to be reminded of the power of saying, God, thank you for what I do have. We may not have a ton of extra, but you know what we do have? We've got a roof over our house, over our heads. We've got food. You know, and sometimes we complain and we stand in front of our pantry that's got all kinds of food and we go, I can't find anything to eat. And there are people around the world that walk miles to find one little loaf of bread so their family can eat. Some of us need a new perspective to understand how blessed that we really are. And so maybe we start by saying, God, thank you for what you've given me already. This season, I'm not gonna complain about what we don't have. I'm gonna say, thank you, God. He looked up, he gave thanks, he did what? He broke it. See, I think there was something symbolic about that. When he breaks the bread, I think he's sending a message that this small little meal is not just for me, but it is to be shared. This is not just for me, but this is, where else did we see Jesus take the bread and break it? Right before he was arrested with his disciples as he grabbed bread off the table, right? He took the bread and he blessed it and he broke it and he gave it to the disciples. What was that symbolic of? Jesus said, my body is broken for you. It's not just for me. This is for you. What if we began to understand that the blessing and provision that God has given to us isn't just for us? I'm not just going to build bigger barns. But I'm going to recognize that God actually wants to use me as a conduit, that God has blessed me so I can be a blessing to others. And so I'm going to take what I have, instead of thinking it's all for me, I'm going to break off and go, you know what? No, some of it's for somebody else. He looked up, he gave thanks, he broke it, he gave it. He gave it to who? He gave it to his disciples. And then his disciples distributed it. See, I wonder if that's a model that he still has for us today. I blessed you so that you would now take and be a blessing to someone else. What if this model, this pattern of provision is still just as true today for us, for you and me. That he's saying, let's look at the source, not the resource. Let's thank him for what he has given us. Let's recognize that it's not all for me. And then let's give it when there's a need. Let's give it. Let's allow God to use us. By the way, can I ask this question? Do you think the disciples got to eat? I think they got to eat far more than they would have if they had just kept that small lunch for themselves. In fact, so much so that I think that this was not a coincidence, but I think this is Jesus' way of trying to teach his disciples something whenever they fear there's not enough. How much did they pick up? How many baskets were left over? One for each of them? Was that just a little God nod to say, don't ever think there's not enough? When I move your heart, when I prompt you to see the need and to move, you trust me and you put it in my hands, watch what I do with it. Come on, I don't know about you, but I want that to be my story. And I'm here today, I'll be the first one. I've told you that I struggle with being generous. I need this kind of date on the calendar every year, otherwise I won't be generous. I need a constant reminder that what he has given me is not just for me, but he is inviting us to change the world through our generosity. Amen, church? Amen, church. Come on, stand to your feet with me. I want for us as we have this moment, I know that there are many of us, some of you, there's a lot of financial worry that's hanging over you, because that tends to be what a lot of people experience today in this culture. Others, you, I don't know what you're worried about. I don't know where scarcity is hitting you. It may not be financial. It could be in love. It could be in your marriage. It could be with your children. It could be taking care of an aging parent. It could be your time. It could be your job, your career. I don't know what it is, but I believe in this moment, maybe God wants to invite us to put it in his hands. And so we're going to do that. Would you just bow your heads for a moment? Let's just have a moment. I just don't look at this as a moment, just a prayer to end the message. I want you to see this as a moment for you to take that thing that's in your heart, to surrender it to him. Father, I pray right now for every person. God, I pray right now for every worry, every struggle represented in this room, online. I pray, God, for those of us like me that struggle to be generous at times because I think, is there going to be enough? God, I pray right now that you would just begin to build faith into us. I pray, God, right now that faith would begin to rise up, that fear, God, would take its rightful place, which is nowhere in my life. But God, faith would become the posture of my life. God, I pray right now for those of us that are here in this place that, God, there is something that we don't feel like we have enough, maybe even for this season. We don't have enough, God, of trust and faith. I'm praying, God, right now that you just begin to fill us. Fill us, God, with your spirit. God, give us a supernatural trust in you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this message. I hope that it encouraged you and inspired your faith. If God is doing something in your life, would you take a moment and let us know? We want to connect with you and we want to be able to pray for you. All you have to do is shoot us an email to hello@thex.church, or you can always send us a DM on one of our social media platforms. And if you know somebody that would also be encouraged by this very message, why not take a moment and just share it with them right now? And as always, I want to say thank you to every single person who so generously financially supports this ministry so we can continue to get messages like these out to people all over the world. We believe God is building something special and you're a significant part of it. Until next time, have a great day.